Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
Chops and J-Lo back with another episode of Chops TV because it has been requested many times over. I will start with Jen. How are you doing today?
I am doing well.
Just well?
Yeah, not swell. Just well.
Just well. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad that we started the show like this. I'm glad that you pushed me and bullied me into asking me how you were doing so that you could come with a, I'm doing well.
Oh, sorry, I'm not performing for you.
You're not performing for me. You're performing for the listener.
Oh, sorry. I don't really care about performing for the listener. Unless they want to subscribe and pay me.
Oh.
Then I shall perform.
Oh, are we talking like some sort of account that people would subscribe to?
Sure. They provide me funds and mm-hmm. I provide them goods.
And what would these goods or performances be?
I guess it depends on what the dollar bracket we're talking. You know what I mean?
I mean, I do know what you mean, but I also in another sense.
I am a reasonable person. Just email me all inquiries, interested parties.
$5 is $5.
Exactly.
Well, that sounds quite mischievous.
No. Nope. One more time. What was that?
Mischievous? Mischievous?
Mischievous, I think is a... But I like whatever word slop is coming out of your mouth. I kind of preferred that.
Mischievous. Is that a word?
Mischievous is...
What am I saying?
Say it again.
Mischievous.
Mischievous.
At least I know I'm saying it wrong. I'm not quite grasping.
Mischievous. Go with that one.
Mischievous. Yeah. Mischief. It's a tough one.
Cool whip. Now say whip. Now say cool.
Cool okay. whip. The whole point of mispronouncing that word was that we watched Loki, all 6 episodes, Loki season 2 in the books. Loki the series in the books? Loki the character? We'll get into it all next. And that next is right now. We're still here. Keep it locked in. So
this is going so well for
this
us.
This is a great start to this week's episode. I am feeling quite mischievous. So stupid.
Low key.
Oh.
A great use of the word mischievous.
All right. We watched Loki season 2. I think that it continues to probably be the best Marvel show. It be between that and WandaVision.
Yeah.
I would say like no, nothing else has come close to it. We actually did like She-Hulk, but it's not at this level. I think this is really well made. I think it looks really good. I think Tom Hiddleston is a really good actor and has probably been underutilized over time throughout the MCU, but now he gets a chance to shine in these 2 seasons of Loki. It's fun to see Owen Wilson around. You almost did this because you do this a lot with shows that they take a long break. There's nothing wrong with it. If you don't want to waste your time and you're not digging it, you dive out of shows. You say, not for me.
It's not for me, bruv.
We're currently getting there with a show that we watched the first 2 seasons of. Season 3's out. You're not feeling it. We might discuss that a little bit later on the podcast. But as far as Loki goes, something reeled you back in about halfway through this season.
Yes, and back to the point about WandaVision and Loki, the only reason why I would say that WandaVision just edges it out slightly is that this season of this show felt almost like a true companion piece in that I don't even know it should have been 2 separate seasons. I think maybe you give us like a more traditional run, like half hour episode run, like pre-streaming, you know, 12 to 22 episodes
back when they did like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like half hour episodes or something, compact the story a little bit, get rid of some of the fluff in the first 3 episodes of season 2, put out an episode, because it really is an arc for this character, and I think it would have been better realized a little bit more condensed, but that's just me.
Yeah, like I think they had enough that it, you know, because we talk a lot about should this be a movie, should this be a show, which direction should they go with any piece of material that they're about to produce. I think it was fine that it was a show, but I do see what you're saying, and it would have flowed just fine because it was, you know, a simple, I think it was both were six seasons, mm-hmm. and they picked up right at the start of season two was right where we ended at season one, yeah. So it wouldn't have been like, it wasn't something where it was like, oh, here's a new season of television. If somebody were to watch this, I don't even know if they would fully... It's been a while since I've seen the finale of season one, mm-hmm. so there'd probably be enough gravitas to that that people would like be like, okay, that felt like a season end. But you might actually just be able to watch it straight through and not even like really realize that there was like a season break
yeah.
in the middle between episode six and what would be episode seven.
Especially because how season two ends, I think... They just had some, like, maybe pacing issues in, like, the first couple of episodes. It was just hard to get back into it after, like, such the climactic episode that you left off in season one. It was a little bit hard to get back into.
Yeah, but it eventually got you there. And
like
I guess...
Like, episode three or whatever. It was, like, right around that midpoint where the action starts to pick back up. It gets a little bit wacky again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Less procedural. More like crazy cosmic.
Yeah, before we get into our spoiler discussion of this, if you're somebody who still is catching up on Loki or wants to go watch it, one more thing to add in that is spoiler free. I liked how this season, and eventually it gets there, because that was underlying over the whole thing of where they set you up to be after season one, but it was much smaller in its like physical scope,
mm-hmm.
but the implications of what they were trying to accomplish and what they were doing and what they were up against were huge and far-reaching. And I liked that, actually. I liked how they could tell this Loki story, no pun intended, that was, you know, a little bit under the surface of big, giant action flick, Marvel-type stuff, huge superheroes, big battle. No, it was a little more understated, but the actual stuff that they were going through, big deal type stuff in the universe.
For sure.
So now moving into spoilers, turn this off if you haven't finished Loki 2, or just listen to it in case you're somebody who just loves spoilers, if you're just one of those weirdos out there. But not to denigrate my former host on Nerd Association, who actually liked spoilers because he liked to know what was going to, like, what to expect a little bit. Most people, not into spoilers. But I undigress back into what we're actually talking about. As the season started, I thought, oh, is this going to... I wasn't ready to dive out quite as much as you, but I thought, is this going to like feel underwhelming as we go on and you're going through it and you've got the characters there and like, what is the TVA and what's going to happen with the villain that they set up with, you know, it's Kang the Conqueror at the end of Loki season one, and then you've got him in Quantumania as well. There's obviously off-set type stuff that they're dealing with that has been... a little bit of a wrench in what their plans are there. And I don't know, yeah. As it was starting, I was just like, okay, so they're running around here and they're trying to make sure that they beat the TVA. And, oh, there's some bad people now who've taken control in the TVA and they've got a chance to do some really bad things. And it felt a little like, all right, just another little story. And then the kind of other shoe drops and you see that, oh, no. That, yeah, those TVA people were doing bad things, but they're not the main antagonist to it. And really, I mean, it comes back at the end to He Who Remains, but really the antagonism throughout the whole thing until you get to that final episode is just, here's a problem and we need to solve it. The time loom is not working. We need to make sure that all these timelines can work in harmony again, and the TVA, the people who are doing the bad one, are going out there and like extinguishing timelines to preserve the
sacred timeline.
The sacred timeline. And then you learn at the end that like, oh, that's all kind of a part of the plan, but actually the time loom is meant to only protect that. And so there's no way to actually fix it. And then that final episode really starts to give you something where you're like, okay, yeah, this is a huge deal. And the way they set it up, and because it's such a huge deal, it is a really good set up to say, here were two seasons of Loki and we're done. And that's good. I like it when, if you're going to make a TV show, it doesn't have to be considered a limited series or anything, but just know that like, I only need two seasons to tell this story. And I hope that, because this, I think, is still something that's successful as Marvel is looking for more hits, I hope that this isn't a way to go back and say, well, Loki was good, so we're going to go back and just retcon this just slightly so that there's more story for him to do. I hope that this was the Loki series and that it's over.
Also, maybe the end for Loki.
Quite possibly. He's got a new job now that looks like he's going to have to sit there on that throne and be in charge of things.
Yep. As soon as we saw that sort of that last setup in the, like, that office right outside of where the loom is, that sort of like headquarters base. And he was like, you see it like click in his head and you're like, oh no, is this a send off? It looks like a send off. So I started getting like slightly, not emotional, but like really invested in what was happening.
And then they, while we're on that, they hit you with some symbolism that you are immediately like, oh, I love that. That's so great. What he did with the timelines is he was kind of reinvigorating the timelines that were dying off after he destroyed the time loom. He was using like Loki magic, so, and then it all forms into.
So the tree of life in Norse mythology, it's spelled Yggdrasil, and I think it's pronounced like Idrizzle or Idrazzle or something like that. But just like the whole process of him, and it was funny because earlier in the season, you had mentioned they were like, why don't they send Loki out there? Isn't he a god? And that guy's just a dude. And
turns out I was right.
Turns out you were right. He is a god. He doesn't really need the suit to go out there. But as he's walking through and the clothes of the TVA starts to like burn away,
disintegrate.
From him,
yeah.
And like the horns come out and his like traditional like. Oh my god, it was so cool. Like the horns come out and you see him get like his, you know, his traditional suit back. And
I'm guessing like a comic book reference even at that, because it wasn't even like what he wore in like the first Avengers. It's going back even further. Yeah,
it looked like super, it just looked like very ancient. Mm-hmm. Ancient and Norse, and it was fucking awesome. So that was really cool. And then he starts to grab the timelines and like inject his power into it, but it doesn't feel what I'm assuming is happening is like it's not enough to just like inject the power, because like the branches are dying, so mm-hmm. he has to like put them together and like keep holding them. And that's why like when he's finally like getting up to his throne and he sits down and he's still holding him, and then it's like the burden, the responsibility of like needing to be there to like keep all these timelines together, and not in a loom but in a tree, and like a, like the verbiage that they were using at the end of the show and like the TVA pamphlets was like growing together. And it was interesting that throughout the series they're calling each of these timelines branches. So, you know, the branches are dying off, and then in the end it ends up becoming a tree. And it's like very important symbolism in Norse mythology, but also in like the expanse of the Marvel comics. Like that is a whole thing of with the tree and, you know, like someone being an overseer of these timelines and multiverses, if you will. It was just like so cool. And this is what I like love Marvel the most, is like when it's so true to the comics and the lore, and it like rewards you for the payoff for investing so much in your time over all these years. Because even when he's about to go out and he says like, I'm the god, or like, I know what kind of god like I have to be for you, for all of us. And that was a callback to the original Thor movie, the first Thor movie that we see him in. The title of the show, the episode, even before we press play, the title was Glorious Purpose. And Thor, the Thor movie, that first Thor movie, he's always preaching about, like, I'm here for a glorious purpose, like all that stuff. So it just, like, if you're a fan and you've stuck around for the song, and especially the sort of like slump, you know, Marvel has had me in particular, it just feels so fun to be like really excited and jazzed again at the end of a show.
Although it kind of does the opposite of what has been the mainstay for Marvel and how they've built the cinematic universe, that it does feel a little more finite, and there's no after credit scene, there's no teaser for something else. It's like, this is what Loki, this was his What purpose? This was his glorious purpose all along. I like that he, it's not actually there. There's not a staircase. That's part of like his journey and like him realizing that his powers are for this, that he ascends to that throne. He actually walks up stairs that don't exist. And then it's also cool that like, you know, you switch it, and this happens a lot of times. This might happen at a place you work at. This happens in politics. It happens in coaching that, like, mm-hmm. oh, you went from a defensive guy to now let's hire an offensive guy and kind of see if we can reinvigorate the program. And I like that it went from two different people who were kind of in charge of time, and the He Who Remains, which is one of the variants of Kang. And then Loki is now taken over, and Kang's idea through the whole thing is the time loom, which actually takes all the loose threads of time and puts them together into one. That's what a loom does. You know, it brings it together and it makes a piece of fabric with all these different strands. Loki turns it into a tree to sort of embrace that it's actually okay to branch out and to keep growing this. And a tree is going to continue to grow. It's not just the symbol of the tree, but what a tree actually does is grow. And he's going to be there to protect all of these timelines rather than wanting to extinguish most of them, I guess is kind of the way the TVA was going about it, letting some go and branch out. But they were like, this not working with this variant, we get rid of it. And then obviously the failsafe of the loom was to get rid of all of them except for the sacred timeline. And Loki's saying, no, it can be a tangled mess of branches going off like a tree, and I'm going to be here not only to supervise and make sure that this continues, but like you said, he's going to stand there and continually pump his magic into them, almost putting any that might just be dying off naturally of whatever, however time works, that no, I'm putting them on life support, and I have to stay here, and I can't just zap them once. It's not enough of my magic. I have to constantly be flowing that magic through. And here where we are, and now Loki is the keeper of time.
Mm-hmm. And the dramatic irony of like finally getting what you want, I feel for me, some of like the most satisfying, the satisfying endings are the ones for characters that you really love that have done very questionable things and get very, very close to what they want. Sort of like Daenerys at the end of Game of Thrones, or Game of Thrones as we know it. In the books also too, a lot of fans theorize that she'll get this close to the Iron Throne or get the Iron Throne and it be taken away from her. You know, like the idea that he finally gets what he wants in the end, but it's like in the worst way imaginable, and it comes with this great, glorious burden, right? This thing that he has to carry. And also like Shakespearean in that way. When Kenneth Branagh, who directed Haunting in Venice and was the Poirot, the lead detective in that, he directed the first two Thor movies, and he read the story as very Shakespearean, right? Because ultimately when you boil down, it's conflict between obviously it's a king, right? And it's like this grandiose setting, but it really is just like a family dynamic where two brothers are fighting in conflict with their father, right? So for him to even go back, it did feel almost very Shakespearean the way that this Loki's story is tied up.
And well, when you're talking about like Shakespearean, how like it gets to that like dramatic core at the end, but also Shakespearean, a man of the people, wrote comedies. And I also liked how, especially in this final episode, but throughout it, obviously there's humor that's a staple of MCU, but I thought it was really interesting how they were able to take the end of, was that episode 3 or 4, where what is it, Victor Timely, he turns into the little strands of himself when he goes out there. And like that was because they play that really seriously, and there's like no music after it happens. And you watch it, and then a few episodes later they turn it around and actually make it somewhat comedic as he's going through like his Groundhog Day version once he figures out how to control his time slipping. I liked how then he was like, well, what if I learn all the physics and stuff so that we can get this done in decades, centuries, maybe, says Victor Timely, and then centuries later. And I was thinking about that. I was like, that would be tedious and annoying, but it makes sense that a character like Loki would be okay with it because he's thousands of years old.
Yep.
So centuries is still a long time, but it's not like something that he is unaccustomed to being around for that long, and he was ready to be in it for the long haul and figure it out. But then as it kept going on, he's like, I have to go back further, I have to figure this out, and he gets to that choice of, well, do I just let it all break apart, or do I start a war by destroying the time loom, or do I just kill the Loki variant? And he can't do it.
So once he realizes that, like, the timing of the specific event isn't enough, there has to be a bigger change, right? So ultimately he gets to the point where he realizes, quote unquote, that he needs to stop Sylvie from killing He Who Remains at the end of time.
Right.
And when you're watching Victor Timely, which is Kang's variant, go through these motions, you're almost like, was this planned from the beginning?
Because It feels like he knows.
Because especially when he gets back and he keeps fighting Sylvie, it does seem concocted in a way, like orchestrated on a grander level, which it is confirmed when he says, like, you really think that I'm just going to let her kill me and destroy all of this and blah, blah, blah. Like, you have two choices. And in both of those choices, there's no act of free will in both of those. So Loki then decides, like, he can't kill her, then finds the third option.
Yeah, and actually does something that is a little bit more free will and decides to take matters into his own hands and take it over, but not from that selfish need to sit on a throne and be the king of time.
That
he sees that, like, this is the sacrifice I'm going to have to make because I can't go the other one. I can't. It's confusing because I like that it didn't become like a romantic relationship, because that opens up a whole new thing of, well, isn't she him?
But
like,
it was Loki, that at first.
A little bit, yeah. But they made it more of a platonic thing throughout this one, and he can't bring himself to do that. So that's a lot on the final episode. It stands out as probably the best episode of the season. The penultimate one was really good as well. As far as some other things that stood out for us, I want to start with what was Obi? He was Ouroboros,
yeah,
in there, and great to see him. What is that actor's name? Obviously, he played Short Round in Indiana Jones, and
he's in
Data in the Goonies,
and he's in the movie with the
Everything Everywhere All at Once,
the Bagels, yes.
Ki Hui Kwan, him. My question to you is, when you see him, do you go, oh, that's Short Round, or do you go, oh, that's Data, or is there anything else that you jump to first for him?
I guess now it's Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That's where you go first?
Yeah.
I go with Data. I was a big fan of the Goonies growing up. Indiana Jones has never fully hit for me and never been something that I've been totally into, but and I was happy to see him, and I didn't know he was going to have such a big role, but he becomes one of the main characters in this one. I thought his character was really funny and creative, and the way they set him up for jokes over time, and then the fact that he was the most, like, open to this is what's happening when Loki is bouncing around to all of them.
And he's a science fiction writer.
Yeah, to all of them in, like, their normal lives, and he immediately convinces him. So I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a bit of a waste of time, but ultimately growing that connection between his core team.
I was worried about wasting time because there was, during that last episode, as they tie it all together at the end, I think it's really good, but I was a little nervous that we were going to get and it was all a dream type feel for it. That, like, nothing that happened over the season happened because he went back and killed the other Loki while we were, before she was able to kill He Who Remains, and that's where we're at, and, like, everything's just back to normal, and there are more Loki and TVA adventures to come. I was happy that as it went on, there's much more finite stuff with it, that, like, okay, this is a true story, a true arc for Loki as well, and I think that was good stuff and a good way to handle it. And as he's going back and meeting all the people in their normal lives, I thought that was Owen Wilson's time to shine. Obviously,
for sure, yeah.
Has the comedic chops, like just playing the jet ski salesman. I think he was doing a great job.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm more leaning towards, like, it should have been either, like, one complete thing or maybe set up a little differently, because we lose some of that, like, time that we had with Morbius and Loki in the beginning, where it's like good cop, bad cop kind of thing that people like so much from the first season, in favor of more time, like, with Rowena and Victor and freaking Miss Minutes,
mm-hmm.
her hot little ass.
okay.
So, and we also don't get a lot of time with Sylvie. And, you know, so a lot of the things that you liked from the beginning of season one, you kind of lose at the beginning of season two. And it sort of feels disjointed in that way. So, and I agree. I like love Owen Wilson, and I love that dynamic between the two of them. I think they play off of each other very well. So I think I just miss getting more of Mobius.
Yeah, and actually, as they like go through it, Mobius gets a little bit of that same feeling of Loki, that like, well, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so he continues to work for the New Look TVA that is now running over the timelines that Loki is essentially in charge of, and they have a much different philosophy with how they do it, but it's still not enough for Mobius to go back and say, I just want to live this life. He goes back and visits it and looks at it, and so that timeline is alive and that version of Mobius is there, but it's not the character that we saw throughout the two seasons.
But here. Also, it like, as influential as the relationship between him and Sylvie was, Loki and Sylvie was, obviously, like, the crux of the show and the crux of this arc for Loki is that relationship with Mobius, because he goes back before he makes that final decision. He goes back to have that conversation with Mobius that first time that they meet at the TVA, and asking him, like, how do you decide who lives and who dies? How do you choose? How do you live with it? All that stuff. And
should there have been more of a fight with the bad people at the TVA and everything? Or do you like that it was essentially just relegated as soon as, you know, shit really hit the fan, that they were just kind of thrown to the side and now they're not even here and the TVA is just empty and this is the real conflict?
I think, with as short of a season that we had, yeah, I think you just get rid of them because they're goons. Right, yeah. By the end of it, so it's like
they're the henchmen.
Yeah,
Kang,
like Rowena. Yeah, maybe she should have gotten a little bit more time, and maybe we will see her again because she is at the end of time somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, still viable for the future, for future projects. But just get rid of them.
Yeah, there is a little bit of setup for other things to branch off this, and obviously the idea of what Loki is, and now that we know all this about time and multiverses have been a huge deal, there's stuff that can easily branch off of Loki. It just, yeah, feels like maybe Loki is done, and Tom Hiddleston's been doing it for 15 years.
Yeah, and good for him, man. Like, I think we still have, I think Chris Hemsworth is still on a contract for at least one or two more appearances. I don't know if that includes movies.
I think he just loves playing Thor too.
Yeah, and so did Tom Hiddleston. That's why he did a whole show. But you know, but it genuinely feels like the right time for this character, and also the implications of what that sort of means going forward, which was so interesting at the end of the original, at the end of the first season, for the setting up the implications for the big bad for the rest of phase, I don't know what,
five or six,
yeah, whatever that second chunk of the Avengers run was going to be, setting up that big villain and sort of like the idea of a multiverse and cosmic hopping and stuff like that. So it really expanded on that and got people interested, and in this instance it is doing the same thing except it's scaling it back.
Yeah, that's something that I really liked about it from two standpoints, like based on like what all the other Marvel stuff looks like. Obviously, Tony Stark and S.H.I.E.L.D. have so much technology available to them, and it's holograms and, oh, look at all this, and Jarvis and all that stuff. And then you go to the TVA, and while it has very large reaching capabilities, I love how everything is like 70s and analog, so it's a very different look from a lot of other Marvel shows. I think Loki's costuming is really good, especially in the second season. I mean, he's mostly in that brown jacket, but I think he looks great in that brown jacket. And then I also like that, and it makes sense for a character like Loki, because it is always, it's a little bit easy to fall back on it, but when you're dealing with multiple timelines and there's so many Kangs and he's not really worried about, I mean, he gets killed continually as Loki keeps going back to that moment by the girl Loki. I like that he thwarted the villain with a plan and doing something on his own that isn't just like, we're just going to beat the hell out of him until he submits.
Which took a long time to get there, right? It's fast
for,
fast for us, but took a lot of time and effort trying to figure out, how am I going to eliminate this threat? very interesting. And not only eliminate the threat for his story, but potentially eliminating a threat for Marvel as well.
And there's where, as good transition, because you were already talking about, like, well, what's going to branch off of this and what's going to happen? Well, what's going on with Marvel actually right now? A very underwhelming opening weekend for the Marvels. It was in like the $40 million range, and that was below even already predictions that had been taken down to a modest level there. Okay, I didn't watch Ms. Marvel. I will probably end up watching the Marvels, but I don't know if we're going to go see it in theaters.
I think when it comes to Disney Plus, unfortunately, I just wasn't that big a fan of Captain Marvel's story when it came out the first time around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I didn't watch Secret Invasion. We missed the Marvels. What is that show called?
Miss Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said Marvels, which she is a character, but anyway. Yeah. So I just wasn't interested from the jump. So if you can't get people like me on board, it's going to be a really hard sell for casual Marvel fans to go to the movies to see this one.
Yeah. And apologies. It's a really hard sell for our dog right now. If you hear her in the background, either panting or tip tapping around. That's what you're hearing. Kit is a little bit a part of the show, but she's trying a little bit too hard to insert herself in today.
Update, though. Kitty used to be the mascot, even though we didn't tell you guys. Kitty was the mascot. Kitty's out because she's bad. She's bad in the moment. She gets too rowdy. So Kitty's out as mascot. Weird Little Freak Boy is in.
Weird Little Freak Boy is now mascot, but he won't be there forever. We're taking applications for mascots. Send us in your ideas for mascots.
Yeah.
Underscore Chops TV on Twitter.
If you want to see what Weird Little Freak Boy looks like, you could visit our TikTok and see the fabulous work that Mark does getting those together.
My prediction for the MCU, as things aren't looking super, they're just not able to just churn out $3 billion movies every year. And I don't think they're ever going to get back to it. I think there's too many people sitting there going, here's how I would fix Marvel, or here's why Marvel is not doing that. No, no. What Marvel did for 15 years was a huge exception to the rule. It's just not going to be that big anymore. People move on from things. Bands are the biggest thing in the world. And then people move on.
They're not.
And go to something else.
An unpopular opinion, they don't need to do it. If you have your audience, you know your audience, cater to your audience and put out content that they will like.
But no, Jen, it's always grow, 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 more, 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 stocks. Give them to the shareholders.
Yeah, money, profit, capitalism.
I think it's, that's kind of an end of an era. It's definitely something to note and to maybe look at like what led to it. But I think it's really just normal human behavior that things aren't the most popular piece of media or pop culture all the time. Yeah. Things go away. Remember how big TRL was? When was the last time you total requested live?
I guess a long time. I haven't total requested live in a while.
It's been a while.
But also to that point, too, it is okay for Marvel to get back to being sort of niche nerd stuff. You know, like how big that first Avenger movies was in 2012 was a flash in the pan that just insanely continued for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Like that doesn't happen. And I don't know if it should, because then it sort of ruins sort of the magic of being there for that event in time. You know what I mean? Like going to see Avengers, going to see Ultron, like those were events in time
to go
for people to experience together, to invest, right? And there wasn't as much content, right? They weren't pumping out like 3, 4, 5, 6 projects. So you really had to stay in tune for the next one.
To go back to like a sports reference that, you know, is usually easier for me to access. If Michael Jordan played forever, it wouldn't really be that special that you said, oh, I got to see Michael Jordan in the 90s when he was at his prime.
Yeah.
And that's what the Marvel is, just not in its prime. And I don't think it's going to be back. That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's okay, too. Like, everybody's like, 5 alarm fire. What's going on with the MCU? And it's like, yeah, they're probably going to have to. So there is value to talking about it and trying to figure it out. But this idea that here's what I would have done or here's how I would save the MCU, you're not going to. Yeah. I think that moment has gone. I was in 8th grade when Iron Man came out. Think about how much I've changed mm-hmm. over that time. Yeah. Like, it's just not going to be something that can hold people forever. And there's no, like, pinpoint reason of it. It's just what happens yeah. to things.
And sort of the magic of that, like, you sort of had an idea of where they were going when they started pumping out these movies and, like, very famous, notable characters and stuff. And you felt like there was going to be a culmination of that, especially when they started putting in those after credits.
Yeah.
But it really was unique in that it was like a shared experience that people went to and they had never seen anything like it. Trying to recreate that almost feeling of magic feels
forced. Fake,
feels forced. It feels fabricated, and people don't want to, people aren't going to subscribe to that. You know what I mean? Like, people are not going to sign up to invest their time in
and don't get us
that feels fake.
And don't get us wrong, Marvel obviously always had a plan to do some of this stuff, but they did not know that it was going to become what it became at the time. And that's why everybody else who has set out to, like, go and make it, it's like, no, lightning's not going to strike twice. You can't just say, well, what properties do we own that we can make a cinematic universe of? Marvel just made the right movies at the right time as the superhero genre was right about to really take off. And they were making them at that time. And they were like, well, we were already planning on interconnecting it a little bit and getting to the Avengers. And then boom, 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 boom. And here we are so many years later. And everything we've had from it. Don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened.
Yeah. The time, people, timing, and place is everything with things like this. With cultural moments like this, it is everything. So scale it back. Get back to the roots of what they started with introducing a mass audience to characters that they might not be, that they're familiar with but might not know a lot about. Get us to fall in love with these again. Take your time with it. Roll it out in such a way, and then maybe we can get to that place again. But trying to shove it down our throats, like, take me out to dinner first.
And it's just too much content at this point. Like we skipped Ms. Marvel, and I was like, fine. Like, I'm not gonna watch that show. I don't have this much time to dedicate to it. And that's something also, like, yeah, pull back a little bit, and the heart grows fonder with time too. Think about, not saying that they're good, but like, Indiana Jones just came out with a new movie that people were at least excited for. It didn't do very well as far as like a critical reception, but people were excited for it. Same thing's happened. Star Wars keeps going away and coming back, and you hope that right now, are they getting into that? Or are they getting too Marvel brained about Star Wars and giving us too much of it, where it's, we're going to lose that magical feeling of, oh, a new Star Wars thing is out, because that's what Marvel's done. There's nothing special about a new Marvel thing coming out anymore.
Well, you make a great point too, because Marvel was so successful that DC tried their hand at it. And it's not even just Marvel flooding the marketplace with superhero movies. It's DC too. And I will eat my left shoe if Aquaman 2 comes out and makes $1 billion. It's just not going to. We're not in that era anymore. Create some scarcity in the market, especially with these Marvel characters, and try something else. Just try something else. You have X-Men now. Try to do that again, I guess, but give it some time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. And moving on to another franchise that we're kind of into.
Wait, hold on. Sorry, before we talk about that, I just wanted to say that this is critical. This is a critical time for Marvel as a company, because we have allowed Loki to sort of rewrite the possible trajectory for the rest of phase 5 or 6 or whatever we're in right now. They sort of gave him an out with Jonathan Majors. They can decide to move forward with him if they want, depending on his ensuing legal troubles and battles, or they could decide not to, because at the end of Loki, it's very quick, but they say, oh, well, we found another Kang variant popped up, but it looks like it's handled. So they could scale it back, send him as like a one-off villain for another movie in one of these other branches or whatever, or just decide to drop them all together.
They could also just throw one line into the next time Kang shows up and be like, he looks different because of this, and just recast him. That's also an option, too.
It's also an option, yeah. So they have,
like, at this point, would him looking different really be like, man, I'm not buying it?
Yeah. So what I'm saying is they have a lot of creative freedom, and we're at a critical point.
Yeah, and you don't need to make a ton of... We don't need three Marvel movies every year anymore. No. We're past that. It can be down to one a year, maybe two series that you throw on Disney+. People watch them, they watch them. And probably also pull it back of like, you have to... Because there's so much, you have to watch everything. Give it a little bit more of like, you could watch this Loki series and not know anything else that's going on in the MCU right now. Mm-hmm. And get everything you need out of it. It helps to know the Loki character from previous installments, but you really don't even need that per se. Mm-hmm. And I think they would be better at that. Like, stop worrying about intertangling everything.
But even getting the A-list people, get the people who are either trying to get a, trying to have a, like a rebound, not rebound. What am I? What's
that? Yeah, rebound's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Rejuvenate their careers, get new faces. We didn't know Tom Hiddleston before that first Thor movie. And now he's one of the biggest actors on the planet.
Yeah.
Right. He's in that top 10 conversation with some of the greats. So find those guys and gals. Bring them on board. Let us fall in love with these characters. Let us fall in love with this new talent. Right? Just get back to basics. Back to basics. I'm very passionate about this.
Now to finish my transition of another series that we like, and I hope we get more Agatha Christie adaptations for here from Kenneth Branagh. And just real quick, we did watch Death on the Nile, which is the middle. So we're watching them three, 2, 1, I guess. Watching it in reverse order of when they came out. But except for like learning about the characters, it's not that 100% necessary. They're their own enclosed stories. But we watched Death on the Nile. Didn't like it quite as much as A Haunting in Venice, but I did look this up. Hercule Poirot. There's like a W. Poirot.
Yeah.
That would be French, right?
For sure, French.
Yeah. So we figured out his name and we liked it. This one, immediately it stood out to me at the beginning that like, okay, so we haven't seen Murder on the Orient Express, but that one came out in like 2017 or something. Mm. And then this one was originally slated to come out in 2019, got pushed to early 2020 because of the pandemic and the calendar getting moved that way. But they took some time to get there. And I think as that went on, they were like, I think we have a chance to do a little bit of a franchise builder here. So the first 25-30 minutes of Death on the Nile, to me, I think they planned it from the beginning of production. I'm not saying that it looks like completely tacked on from like a reshoots standpoint, but they definitely put that whole scene with him in World War One and how he's going through, and he is the reason, or not the reason. I mean, his plan works, but then his captain or general or whoever dies because he hits the tripwire, and that's why he has such the crazy mustache, because he gets the face. The whole point is that part. I was like, okay, so they're just trying to give us some backstory because they're going to build whatever little universe they want here. It's not going to be something as big as the MCU, but it's a fun little string of movies that we've enjoyed two of them so far. Here's a little backstory on who Poirot is. Mm-hmm. Because in that, when we just watched kind of Cold, A Haunting in Venice, it was, I mean, you get it. He's a detective and stuff. But we didn't have that much with it. So I think as they wanted to expand this, they wanted to give a little bit of backstory of who he is and also why he has such a ridiculous mustache.
Yeah. Felt disjointed. I will say it was hard to get through the first 20 minutes only because I was waiting to get to the meat of the story, and it felt like it was a long time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now in hindsight, if you watch this like it's a sequel to something with a character that you know or want to know a little bit more about, that makes sense. But from the third movie, we kind of revisit a lot of that backstory. We know that he was in the war. It's real. It's like just post-war time. He's obviously got some PTSD trauma. He's got this shadow around him and this idea that, he brings death to people that he encounters. So he's living a more isolated life in retirement in Venice, trying to, Like, we get a lot of that. So it felt kind of like a slog in the beginning. And I just wasn't that big of a fan of this second installment.
No, it wasn't as good. The mystery wasn't as good. The environment, especially the CGI shots, didn't look great, and I wanted to be like, am I just being a snob here, but I looked into it, and when this movie came out, there were plenty of people on Twitter, and there were articles written about it that, like, the CGI just doesn't look right. One person said, like, maybe it was the lighting, that because it's CGI, and they're also, like, in a studio, like a green screen studio or whatever, when the people are actually in it, that they're using studio lighting, and the lighting in Egypt and on the pyramids and stuff like that is very specific and very iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, why not just go to Egypt, guys? Like, why not, like, do that?
When,
like,
was this movie? When did it come out?
This came out in February 2022.
So I'm wondering if part of that was COVID, right?
But see, it was slated to come out in December 2019. Instead, comes out in February 2022. And it's like,
wouldn't
you guys have had time to maybe work on this a little bit more? I know that, you know, I'm not mad at the effects artists because they're overworked and underpaid. That's been a long-standing thing. Talks about them getting unionized and everything in Hollywood. But you did have extra time that, like, somebody must have seen this in the year and a half that it was kind of on the shelf. Not quite a year and a half, more like 15 months or so. But it was on the shelf, and then couldn't somebody have said, hey, you know what? This needs to be tightened up a little bit. Yeah. Maybe they were worried about the PR of Armie Hammer being one of their leads.
I think that might have been part of it. It was sort of during that era, and a lot of and it wasn't just this project. A lot of things that Armie Hammer was connected to got derailed as a result of his his public PR troubles. For eating people, maybe? No. Allegedly. Don't sue me, Armie Hammer. Don't. Swear to God, don't sue me. Don't bite me. Get those choppers away from me, Armie.
That's legally, you covered yourself.
Okay,
you're good.
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
You're good there. Yeah, as far as you mentioned that this story didn't grab us as much, I do like that Poirot gets to go through it, and as he's trying to figure out the big crime of a murder or, you know, a Murder on the Orient Express. That one has to be a murder, too. Not that I've seen it.
It's always murder.
But there's littler crimes that are maybe committed by other people who aren't quite the big bad, but they're doing something, too. And I like how he figures those things out. But this one did feel a little underwhelming because figures out who steals the necklace from Gal Gadot. And then, what's his name? Book? He gets shot. Dead. Okay, so nothing for that guy. And then you find out who the two murders are. That spoiler alert for Death on the Nile. It's Jackie and Simon, Armie Hammer and the other girl.
Bonnie and Clyde.
And they were always trying to steal the money from Gal Gadot's character. Okay, but then she shoots both of them and kills both him and herself. And it's like, okay, so he did solve it. He solved multiple mysteries, but everyone's dead. That felt a little, like, underwhelming to me.
The bodies coming off of the boat versus the bodies walking onto the boat.
And
they got ratioed.
I thought it was a much cooler character moment in Haunting in Venice when, yeah, they got the matriarch lady, Beth Dutton, right? They got her and she's being taken away at the end. And then the other guy, the former police officer and stuff, who had, can't remember specifically what he did wrong. I'm not worried about that part. I like that he was like, I think you've served enough. That's an interesting character beat to have him almost be like a judge or an arbiter of justice himself and just be like, that one's not important. We're going to let it go. And this one, you don't get any of that play because everybody's just dead. And so there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. And also the finale setup of we're going to reveal who done it. I like the one in Haunting in Venice more. I think it was very more like atmospheric. I feel like it feels sort of like we just stumble upon it in Death on the Nile.
Yeah, I would agree. So I still like this one, but no, it wasn't as good as The Haunting in Venice, but I'm still in to see more Poirot in The Murder on the Orient Express and hopefully another sequel or two.
Yeah, definitely liked it enough to go back to the first one. It's a very good place to start.
All right, so next week is Thanksgiving. We've got some things lined up that we're going to get into. We might go see Wish, the new Disney movie, which is based on Wishing Upon a Star, I suppose.
I guess. I don't know. I'm very excited to not say once, you know? Just get it out of my system now because we are making family-friendly content next week.
Okay, sure we are. And then December come, we're going to have plenty of Christmas movies to watch. Christmas decorations are already up in the Chops household. Kit is ready to get things going.
Okay.
All right.
Got it. This is why you got fucked. And Weird Little Freak Boy is in.
Weird Little Freak Boy is now the mascot, and you aren't. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.